I'm Adam Foster, and you are listening to the Project Prospect podcast. Been a little while since we've done a show, but I had Jared Thatcher, who is with us today, reach out to me about resuscitating the podcast. Jared's a baseball enthusiast who lives in a pretty good baseball country right across the street from Camelback Ranch. And Jared, maybe you can give the listeners a brief introduction about yourself and let them know who else we have with us tonight.
Sure. Thanks, Adam. Like you said, I'm Jared Thatcher. My Twitter handle, we're going to everybody's Twitter handle here, but mine specifically is @Jared_Thatcher. We're joined, of course, you just heard Adam Foster, and I'm assuming you already follow him if you hear this podcast, but his Twitter handle is @AdamWFoster. The founder of Project Prospect, the man, the myth, the legend. And then we also have on Wes Yee. Hey, Wes, say hello to the internet.
Hello, internet.
Wes pitched in college, and he's written for a few different websites, but more recently Dugout Report, and he's going to be writing for Project Prospect coming up pretty soon. I am the least credentialed of the people, but I really enjoy doing podcasts, and I contacted Adam about starting it back up, and he's allowed me to kind of take the reins a little bit. So let's get right into it then, guys. Let's first start with a general overview of the Arizona Fall League. That's kind of why I met Adam a few weeks ago and Wes out here. You guys were out here scouting in the Arizona Fall League, so why don't you give us a little overview of that?
I can start us off. I've been going for about 7 years, and the one thing everyone talks about there is it is a very hitter-friendly environment. It's the same environment that players play in for spring training. They use most of the same venues. The ball carries. You'll see some lazy fly balls leave the park. Anyone who watched the Rising Stars game saw that. The pitching quality also is behind the hitters. Typically, it's double-A caliber hitters who are close to reaching the big leagues. The pitching's closer to high A. It's nice with the draft and the signing deadline. One positive externality of having guys sign by the 15th is that you end up with more pitchers signing late who then get sent to the Fall League. So we've gotten to see Steven Strasburg, Mike Leake, Danny Holdson, Mike Miner, Garrett Cole. There have been a number of top college guys, but for the most part, it's more high A, double A relievers who might have had an injury. And then also, it's so late in the season that you tend to have a lot of player fatigue. Does that kind of align with what you observed, Wes, going out there for your first time?
Oh, yeah, it's definitely a hitter's league. They did everything but bring metal bats to the Arizona.
What about the pitching quality, Wes? You're the resident pitcher here on the show.
Yeah, I think Adam's right on. The pitchers are definitely behind the hitters. We saw a number of high-scoring affairs, including one game that we saw, I think, 17 walks. And these are guys who are trying to work on command and pounding the zone. And for many guys, it was a struggle. And one of the things that we really noticed was the amount of attention that the guys that are sort of touted prospects got. We saw Jed Bradley on the Thursday night game, and people were just blown away by this guy. And he's a good prospect, but this isn't Steven Strasburg. This isn't Garrett Cole. And just by virtue of being a guy who could even sit in the low 90s from the left side, he was getting quite a bit of attention.
Hmm. Okay, so now that, listeners, you have a general overview of kind of what we're dealing with in the AFL and what you're looking at, let's talk about this specific episode. This episode, we're going to be answering a few questions from our Twitter followers, and Adam will be answering those. I'll ask the guys about one of my favorite prospects, and then I'll give Adam and Wes the chance to discuss the prospect that impressed them the most that they saw. And then we'll cover a couple other guys, some big names that everybody wants to hear about that they were able to see. So
tell them about the grand finale.
And the grand finale of
the lightning round.
And also the top 100 sleeper.
The top 100 sleeper. I've read about this on the Twitter handle for you, Adam, so I'm sure that's going to be impressive. Okay, so let's get started with a couple of questions. Adam, you had some questions that came on your Twitter. Anything that you can kind of answer or help some guys out with?
Yeah, let's start with one from Seth Stoves. Seth does an awesome job with Seth Speaks and Seth Tweets, and he asks, Aaron Hicks really came on strong as the season went along. What are your thoughts on him? For me, Hicks was a guy I saw 2 years ago. I was with a scout who was looking at him to potentially acquire Hicks for an established big league reliever. And the body comp we both saw right away was Bernie Williams. You get someone who obviously being looked at on the mound out of high school has a very strong arm, very athletic, very good bet to stick in center fields and be an above average defender there well through his 20s, maybe into his 30s. So it's a pretty good starting package. He is a switch hitter. He has more foot speed covering ground in the outfield than he does stealing bases. And seeing Hicks at the Fall League just last week, my thoughts on him were he hadn't progressed as much as I was hoping. And it was the closest look I'd gotten to see at his bat. I'd only seen him a few times in some minor league spring training games before. And for me, he wasn't an aggressive enough hitter. I think he has the ability to succeed someday at the plate, but he really doesn't have the confidence yet. And Wes, maybe you can chime in too. Seeing guys like Bryce Harper and Trout, these pretty good bets to be above average big league hitters, when you compare someone like Hicks to them, he really has a long way to go with the bat still.
You know, it surprised me to hear you say that you saw his bat, because I didn't see it, and I saw him play, I think, a couple of days. This is a guy that, as Adam said, has a lot of tools. He looks good in a baseball uniform, but when he's in the batter's box, he looks hesitant, and he looks a little bit feeble. He looks like when he takes a hack, it looks like the bat's going to get knocked out of his hands. It does seem like he's a little bit unsure of himself. He's not an aggressive hitter, like you said, which has given him he's put up good walk numbers, but in the low minors and for a young player, you want to see a guy hit, and we haven't seen that yet, and I'm not sure we ever will. I know you said he could stick in center, and I know you mean defensively for sure. I'm totally on board with that, but I think, I don't know, another year or two of this, and this is a guy that could just end up on the mound.
So do you think, either of you, is he a top 100 guy? Is he a fringe guy? Or we're not even talking, you know, top 200 here.
I think you're not going to see Aaron Hicks on most top 100 prospects lists. He's someone who I'm still strongly considering just because of the defensive upside. But after seeing him at the Fall League, I'm more hesitant to put him as a top 100 prospect than I was heading into it.
I think that's right.
Yeah. Got it. Okay, Adam, any other questions that you got that you wanted to answer?
Yeah, let's do one more from Bennett Hip. He wanted to know our thoughts on the Braves prospects from the Arizona Fall League specifically, and I'm only reading this one, so we get to prove that we can enunciate some prospect names, because I think we're going to butcher some over the years. Curtis Slavich and Christian Bethencourt. We got to see Curtis Slavich play a few times. He's made some noise out in the Fall League because he's put up some good numbers there, but a guy who I believe was 22, 23 in high A this year, doesn't have a lot of defensive value. I think you'll get guys, and one guy who I'm not as high on as other people at the Fall League this year was Mike Olt, where you might have some older guys who played in college who come out and just tear up the Fall League. And for me, Curtis Slavich fit a bit in that mold. I didn't see him as an impressive hitter. I don't see him as a big leaguer, but he made enough noise at the Fall League to at least get discussed. And Christian Bethencourt is someone who was well known when he signed as a toolsy high upside catcher. The first time I saw him take batting practice, it was one of the least impressive batting practice sessions I've ever seen from a professional baseball player. But seeing him at the Fall League this year, he has made progress. He does have a well above average arm. As a catcher, he is more in the athletic mold than the short and slow, and this is the only position he can play. He's an athlete behind the plate. I still see his swing as being pretty grooved, and I'm not a huge fan of his approach, but he has enough power. He'll put some backspin on the ball where, because of his defensive upside, I guess not terribly dissimilar from Aaron Hicks, and he's young. You kind of give him the benefit of the doubt. You see some offensive tools. And in Bethencourt's case, too, I see a little more advanced bat than Aaron Hicks right now. And he's someone who I like as a catcher going forward. I know some people talk about converting him to the mound, but I still think he could stick at catcher and be a big league regular there.
I got a Javi Lopez comp on Bethancourt.
Really?
With less power. I don't know if it's just because, you know, the same team, but that was thrown out there by a scout that I talked to. So.
Javi Lopez had plus frosted tips.
Nice comp. Okay, so now that we answered a couple questions from the followers, if you have questions, we want to remind you to send them to any of us, to our Twitter handles at Jared_Thatcher, at Adam W. Foster, at Wes Yee. We'll try and get them onto the podcast. Or you can email any of us, and I think you can mostly find our emails on our Twitters. If not, mine's thatcher.jared@gmail.com. So email me questions that you have, and we'll get them on the show.
Can we pause for a second? I saw one other question come across on Scooter Jeanette, and we saw him a couple times, and I had a strong opinion on this guy, and I know Adam has one as well. He is a little dude, and he takes monster cuts, and I don't think that swing's going to play real long for him.
Yeah, in his case, he's someone I saw at Brewers camp a few years ago, and he took a monster cut and hit a monster bomb. And it was one of those home runs where at a minor league complex, you might have people watching multiple games, and you had guys from other fields looking to see, oh, wow, this little dude just hit one out. And I was talking with one of my coworkers today who's a baseball enthusiast about Joe Panic and how I was surprised with how big and strong Panic was. And it's not uncommon for guys in the minor leagues to be pushed to second base because they're too small to play shortstop, to have the physical strength, the arm. And when you see someone like Joe Panic, who's the size of a shortstop but handles second base just fine, for me, it's that much more exciting. And seeing Scooter Jeanette, he's a minor league second baseman who's probably below average size for a minor league second baseman. So it's not a frame that's easy to project to the big leagues. And he does have a little bit of power, but he's not a patient or selective hitter. And given that he's already disadvantaged by his size, I didn't get a great look at his defense, but he's a second baseman, not a shortstop, and I don't know if he hits enough to be a regular at the second base position in the big leagues.
And as obviously as a second baseman, he's not going to come up and be a utility guy because he can't play shortstop.
That's a point that I think a lot of prospect people lose sight of. If you're looking for a fantasy second baseman or a second baseman to get excited about, realize this guy's going to have to be a great defender or hit a lot because, yeah, he's probably not a utility guy.
So does he make it as far as Jose Altuve, you know, making the major leagues, tiny guy? I think he's a little more selective probably, but...
Altuve's pretty aggressive too, and I had a chance to see him this year in the fall league. The fun thing about Altuve is even though he's not that big, he's very physically mature. He's already filled out. In Gannett's case, he looks like a skinny high school kid. In Altuve's case, it's kind of like, oh, wow, this tiny guy, if you look at him close, is really strong. And Altuve's a very good contact hitter with a good approach. Gannett's not either of those.
Perfect. Okay, we answered one more question there, so let's move on. Now, I'm going to ask about a guy that when reading Twitter and just seeing the feeds come along, his name was thrown about so much to every person who scouts, to every person involved at all with Arizona Fall League. And my question is on Junior Lake. Is Junior Lake, number one, is he even going to be a legitimate shortstop? I don't think he will, and I'm sure you'll answer that. But also, how did he have this pretty decent AFL, and how far is he going to go?
Start us off, Wes.
Well, he looks a lot like Chris Young. Go ahead, Adam.
That's like Lake is a physically impressive young ball player. He's been young for his level, going up through the minors. He's very tall. I think if you're looking at a big athletic potential shortstop, he passes the eye exam. But when you watch his defense a little more closely, it becomes evident that that's not his long-term home defensively at shortstop, that maybe he's a third baseman, maybe he's an outfielder, maybe he's a DH. And then you look at the bat and say, well, does he have enough bat for third base? And he has good power. He's someone who gets a lot out of a pretty thin frame. He has bat speed. You have to generate that kind of power with his frame. He has opposite field power. And I noticed every Cubs guy we saw, Wes, when we saw Mesa play, had a similar approach in that they don't take a lot of pitches and they're up there hacking. And And Lake does this, and I think you see with big leaguers. I know Pablo Sandoval, this happened in his second year. His first year, he was able to swing at a lot of pitches, catch pitchers off guard. The second year, they started throwing in more pitches out of the strike zone, and it took him a while to adjust. And when I see a guy in the minors who's already having problems with being selective and really putting himself at a disadvantage by default by chasing pitches like Junior Lake does, then it makes it harder to believe in the bat. And I saw enough from him where I have a very difficult time projecting him as an MLB regular, let alone an average MLB player.
He's definitely got the tools that are going to tantalize and excite people. Like Adam said, he's got the power to drive the ball the other way, which is a big deal for a skinny guy who's fast. He shows speed. I think he stole almost 40 bases this year. But yeah, it's tough to see that bat translating to the big leagues without a major change in the approach.
So a couple of guys from the other websites here that scout and rank prospects have said that he's got at least a 70, 75 arm, and who knows, maybe he'll transition to be a pitcher. Is that even a possibility?
I don't think you think about that too much with the guy who's still in his early 20s. Typically, the guys who get converted to the mound aren't guys who you've heard a lot about as hitting prospects, especially because if you're going to convert a guy to the mound who you've already given a few seasons as a hitter, it's unlikely that he's going to be a starting pitcher. You're more likely looking at a relief pitcher. And I mean, who was the guy the Blue Jays had at third base who's now the closer for the White Sox?
That's a great question.
Sergio Santos. Santos was a guy who was young in AAA and was producing, and everyone kept talking about he has this big arm, and he wasn't able to make the jump. But that's one of the more prominent hitting prospects who I can think of who was switched to the mound recently. And I think just, again, because you know you're getting a reliever. And the same thing goes for Christian Betancourt. The same thing goes for Andre Till Simmons. There are a number of guys in the minor leagues. Shoot, he's even talked about initially with Jerks and Profar. A lot of teams liked him more as a pitcher than hitter. I think that's kind of a last resort. Are we going to 40-man this guy before we decide to let other teams take him away approach?
Alexia Sando is another example of that. He was an outfielder, and now he's actually converted to being a starter, but he had to go into the bullpen.
But was Ogando a guy who people really who had buzz as a hitting prospect?
No
buzz.
No, I was just looking that up the other day. I was just reading about that too when I saw he was going to the starting rotation. Let me ask you this: He's obviously, Junior Lake is obviously blocked at shortstop, right, by Starlin Castro. So if he moves to third, is there anybody else that might even, and I don't know how much you know about the Cubs system, but anybody that could even block him from coming up if he learns to hit and playing third base?
I Josh Vitters might still play third base for them. He might end up being a first baseman or outfielder. The day that Wes and I saw Vitters in the Paul League, he was playing in the outfield, and I didn't think he looked the greatest out there, but I think it's easy to see a guy who's young and has reached the upper minors and has buzz for having upside, but there are a lot of guys like that too, and even guys who get a ton of hype. Joel Guzman's a good case. I think he was someone who was thought to have a chance to push one of the cornerstone players of the Braves franchise to the outfield, and he was a hype prospect in the upper minors and didn't click for him in the big leagues. I think any big league team scouts are going to know their own organization well enough to be able to make a recommendation to the general manager as to whether a guy's ready for a big league spot, and that's something the manager will study too. And if any manager were to look at the junior like we saw at the Fall League and say, I want this guy in the big leagues next year, I'd question that judgment.
Got it. Okay, moving on. Wes, I'm going to switch it up here and go with Wes first.
Because I talk too much.
That's right. That's exactly why. Wes, who was the prospect that impressed you the most this year during the AFL while you were here?
Well, I really like Nick Franklin. I kind of went in as on the fence with him. He had an interesting track record where he had played really well, and then he suffered an injury this year. And I was looking forward to seeing whether or not he looked like a shortstop. And after seeing him, he does look like a shortstop. He's got quick hands. He's got a good enough arm. Now he's a guy who could end up being a utility guy because he's got the glove for short or second, or even third, and he's got a good bat. We saw him drive the ball the other way a couple of times. He's not going to be a 20, 30 home run hitter, but he's got gap power, and I like him.
I'm with you on that one too, Wes. I think Franklin's the guy who's really going to take off again. He had mono for a lot of 2011 and didn't perform that well in High Desert, with High Desert being one of the most hitter-friendly ballparks in the minor leagues. He's someone too, when I was talking before about Scooter Gennett and some of the shorter guys getting shifted to second base, Franklin's bigger than Gennett and he has more power. And I see him as a big league regular, and I think he could be an above average one.
You see him at second base or at shortstop?
I think second base. I don't think he's going to be a sure-handed, consistent enough defender. And maybe that is just from seeing him twice at the fall league. I didn't catch him at spring training aside from a pinch hit at bat. But in the Rising Stars game, he definitely showed that he's not the most sure-handed shortstop. And I think usually the guys who end up sticking at shortstop in the big leagues are guys who are well above average defenders in their youth, because it's common for players as they get older to lose a step and lose some flexibility. So if they're not picking it in the minors at shortstop, I have a hard time projecting him there in the bigs.
And he's got a lot of time, right? I know you wrote that he's the fifth youngest player to reach Double A this year, so he's got a lot of time to really season, if you will, in the minors, right?
Yeah, and the other impressive thing about Franklin is he has a high baseball IQ. One of the first things I heard from a scout who'd seen him before I had a look was, when I watched Nick Franklin play, the scout said that he thought he looked like a college guy. And then when he found out he was a guy from the high school ranks, he was pretty impressed. And I think the combination of being relatively physically mature and having more savvy than you'd expect from someone his age is something that gives me high hopes for Franklin, not only rebounding next year, but making himself part of the Mariners' big league roster or whatever team he ends up with if they trade him pretty soon.
Okay, let's move on here. Adam, I'm going to ask you the same question. Who was the guy that impressed you the most this year, AFL?
For me, and it was because I hadn't gotten a good enough look at his defense before, and I was confident in his bat, but getting a good look at his defense, it was Nolan Arenado. If you go back and look at prospect lists and see which guys people are too high on and which ones they're too low on, I think it's very easy to gravitate towards the big bats and outfielder or first baseman who's already shown he can hit at a high level. But once he gets up to the big leagues with his peers, at those positions you have to hit a lot. And it really makes you appreciate the value of someone who can play up the middle defense or third base. Third basemen who hit, especially these days, are hard to come by. And Nolan Arenado is someone who I think could be a well above average big league hitter. And watching him play defense, I thought he is getting close to a 20 runner. He doesn't have foot speed. I think Wes, you had said it looked like he was running with injured hamstrings.
I thought he mentioned something about running like a injured horse. Something
yeah,
like that.
If he was a horse and you saw and he was racing for you, you'd probably shoot him at the end of the race. But no, I was surprised by his defense too. I think he's a third baseman. There's that question isn't in my mind. I think he's a big league third baseman. He's got good hands, a quick release, and he's got good awareness. You can see he's in the right spots. He's able to charge the bunt. He's able to make a throw on the run, and that's what you like to see out of a third baseman.
But he's got room too, right? I just saw that the Rockies traded away probably their best option at third base. And now they're left with a couple underachieving first-round draft picks in Brandon Wood and Ian Stewart. So does he make the team this year?
I don't think so. I think it would be hard to jump a guy from high A to that level, especially with Arenado, too. He was a sort of extreme case in low A of someone who didn't walk almost at all, almost to the point where you wonder if some coaches said, hey, you can take a pitch or two. And he showed great improvement in that area in the California League last year or this year. And he also showed outstanding ability as a contact hitter. I love when you see a guy whose hands are just homing missiles to the ball. I saw that in Dustin Ackley when I saw him in college and then coming up through the minors. And you definitely see it when you watch Albert Pujols hit. I like a guy who you know is confident enough to make contact the majority of the time. So he's not afraid to hit with two strikes in the count. And if he wants to swing a little harder, he has that ability to make contact when he needs to, so he can take a big cut. And Arenado left the park a lot in the fall league. He was named the league's MVP. He was one of the younger players out there. I think he has it going for him on offense and defense. And for me, he's in the conversation for top 10 prospects in baseball right now.
Well, the door's open for him in Colorado when he does decide to arrive there. Let's talk about a couple other guys that you guys saw. We'll start with Will Myers. You get a good look at Will Myers?
Go for it, Wes.
We got a decent look at him. We actually missed him his first game around. It seems like they're being careful with him. He did have that knee injury where he had I believe he got cut and then he got infected. Is that right, Adam?
Yeah, I think he had tripped and fallen when he was heading to his apartment on a rainy day. Kind of a fluke injury that slowed him down in 2011.
Yeah, you know, he looked a little bit uncomfortable in the batter's box when I got a look at him. I did talk to one scout that said that he actually liked Myers better than he liked Harper and Mike Trout, which is obviously high praise and bodes well for Myers going forward. I think he's a really good prospect. I'm a little worried about something that we discussed with a couple of people was the way that he hits with a really straight front knee. It puts a lot of pressure on that knee, and I don't know how long that takes to develop or if it's going to end up becoming an issue, but something to just keep an eye on, I think.
Yeah, that was something Jason Gray brought up when we were talking a little bit about Myers. But I don't worry about the front leg, and I think Myers is going to be a successful hitter. He's another guy who makes pretty good contact for a power hitter. And also, I think he really does a good job, especially for someone his age, of controlling at bats. To me, it was clear that he has good pitch recognition, which really, when you watch a lot of fall league guys, you notice that a lot of them don't. I think it's easy to become accustomed to watching big leaguers and seeing guys who are picking up breaking balls early and laying off of them and waiting for their pitch. And that's one thing that I think Myers does really well that gives him an advantage over a lot of other minor league hitters. He must have excellent vision, and he's also willing to be patient. But I think one of the least discussed aspects of his game, because initially people wanted to believe he was going to be a catcher, I didn't think he had the mobility to do it. Ultimately, when he was moved, the discussion was that his bat was so far ahead of his glove, but I don't think you move a guy off a position where he can be that valuable of a defender unless you have worries about his defense there. And I don't think Will Myers is a good defensive outfielder either. I think he's a little heavy-legged out there, and he's more of a get-the-job-done type, especially if you're projecting what his body's going to be like when he's in his late 20s, early 30s. He's more of a guy who will be okay enough out there than any kind of difference maker. I think he'll be a below-average defensive corner outfielder, which means he's going to have to hit a lot, but I think he will.
He's got ridiculous power, right? I mean, on the 20-80 scale, what are we talking here?
I don't use the 20-80 scale a ton unless that guy really stands out one way or the other, but he's probably in the 65 to 70 range.
Well, I guess with that, and if some guy in the stands is tipping him off pitches, he could hit a lot of bombs in Toronto along with the rest of them, right?
Could happen.
Okay, let's see. Let's move on to the next guy we have. Adam, this is actually yours. Joe Panic, you're pretty high on him. I read a little bit on the article on the Project Prospect site. You're pretty high on this kid.
Yeah, I think Panic, anytime you get a guy who's not from a baseball hotbed who starts making noise for the draft, and Panic is a Northeast college guy, they don't tend to produce a ton of hyped guys entering the draft. But I was anxious to get a look at him, and he continued to impress me. I thought he turned the double play really well at second base. I don't see him as a shortstop. I see him as a second baseman, but a guy who is a confident contact hitter, who isn't afraid to swing hard and makes a lot of contact even when he does swing hard. I found it difficult to find holes in his game. I don't think he has the arm for shortstop. I don't think he has the speed to be a stolen base threat, but I think he will be someone who moves quickly and ultimately becomes an average, maybe slightly above, but more likely average, slightly below big leaguer. Someone who you can pencil in your lineup for 5 or 6 years and have him pretty cheap and be a valuable contributor to your team.
What position do you think he lands at, Wes?
I think second base is right. He doesn't have a great arm, but he does have quick hands. And like Adam said, he does turn the double play really, really well. I actually like his speed. I saw him leg out a triple, and he's – when he gets it going, I think he could be a 15-20 steal guy. And now San Francisco doesn't run a lot, so that could impact that number. But I like him.
All right, let's move on again here. So this time we're gonna do a little comparison. There's been some comparisons out there, and we'll save the big Trout versus Harper for last. But let's go right now with Goes versus Hicks. Adam, you take Goes.
Other way around. Goes is my guy.
that's why I wanted to do it opposite. Go ahead and take Goes then, Wes.
Okay, I love Anthony Goes. From what I saw, the guy, he's got, I mean, you talk about tools with Hicks. Goes has as good an arm. I mean, I saw him catch a fly ball at the track in right center field and throw the ball to third on a line. I mean, this guy has a freaking cannon. He's going to be fun to watch out there in the outfield. He runs like the wind. People talk about 80 speed. That's him. He's got a lot of holes in his swing. The guy takes he takes monster cuts as well, just like Scooter Gennett. But he's got the power to translate that into extra base hits. And Hicks, I've already ragged on Hicks enough, but I like Ghost quite a bit.
I think Goes is more the sexier upside kind of guy that I don't think his approach is the greatest. He swings at a lot of pitches that are out of the strike zone, which is kind of the opposite from Hicks. I don't have a lot of confidence in Goes figuring it out at the plate. I saw him 2 years ago, then again at the Fall League, and I didn't see a lot of progress, but occasionally he will get a hold of the pitch. Wes, most of the pitches we saw him get a hold of while we've got to look at him at the Fall League were foul balls, the opposite way, fastballs he was late on. But I definitely see the upside with Goes, and I think there's more there than there is with Hicks. But Hicks, for me, as a guy who is patient and has a good understanding of the strike zone, while I don't think he's going to become a superstar, I have a more comfortable time projecting him as a big league regular than I do Goes. I think Goes could be an inconsistent, has extended slumps, doesn't potentially ever figure it out type of player. And I think Hicks at the minimum will get on base and they're going to provide similar defensive value. I liked them both in the outfield, but I guess I saw Hicks get more attempts and I've watched him extensively and I'm very confident that Hicks is above average defender.
So who reaches majors first?
I think it's Goes. Hicks has a lot of work to do.
I don't disagree with that. I think even though Goes is going to be streaky, especially beginning of his career, I think he's capable of putting together a hot streak that gets him that opportunity where Hicks is still a little more lost about how to be an impact hitter and how to potentially hit at the big league level. Goes is going to run into some accidents and make some noise.
Next guy we'll talk about has already reached majors and played a little bit this year, so let's get into Trout versus Harper. Trout and Harper have to be, or are, on probably almost every list 1-2. You know, depending on who you're talking to, they'll be vice versa. But let me ask you something before we get into Trout versus Harper. And what I want to know is, when you're ranking a prospect number one and number two, what are you basing that on? Like, you're ranking him number one that he's going to have the longest career, the highest WAR over that career, the first to reach the majors. Like, what is that based on, Adam?
This is a great question. Wes. I hear this one a lot. To me, I always look at it as if, hey, we're doing a redraft of everybody in the minor leagues, and this is the guy that I would take first overall.
Okay, so he's going to be, you know, your player for the next 20 years. He's going to be your guy.
Or at least the next 8.
Okay, or at least the next 8. Because I'm just thinking, when the Trout versus Harper comes up 1-2, you know, and obviously you guys are the pros in the at this, but I'm thinking, why not throw Matt Moore one? He's already shown he can do it a little bit last year. He has, you know, pretty high upside, and, you know, why don't you want him for the next 8 years?
I don't think anyone's really going to fault you by having a guy 1, 2, or 3. When you look back historically at prospect lists, there are guys up in that range who don't make it. So if you're going to take Harper and say that he's the higher upside, he's the better chance to be a out-of-this-world player than Trout, then you're also rolling the dice a little bit. And for me, I would rather, and I'm think probably in the minority with this, have a guy who I'm very sure, as confident as possible, is going to be a well above average big leaguer for a long period of time. And I would prefer not to roll the dice on someone Harper's age unless I'd seen them and had a lot of confidence in them. And I look for a player who doesn't have a lot of holes in his game, who's a very good bet to go forward. For me, putting a pitcher like Moore at the top because of the injury risks that come with any pitcher would be saying that there isn't a dynamic hitter in this class who compares with the upside of that pitcher. In this case, I think in Trout and Harper, you get a ton of upside, and both are close to the big leagues. Like you said, Trout's already played there, so it would be hard for me to put more over either of them.
All right, so having said that, Wes, who's your number one between the two?
I like Harper, and this is something that Adam and I discussed while we were in Arizona, between the two of them. I wouldn't be sad if I ended up with Trout, but I think Harper he's got this swagger about him, and you can see it as soon as they're playing catch, they're taking BP. This guy knows what it is to be the guy, and he's got a little bit of that it factor, and Mike, you know, Mike Trout's a real exciting player too, but you put him next to each other and you throw him the keys, Harper's driving the car. And that's the guy that I would build my team around.
Adam?
I like Trout. I think Trout is going to provide significantly more defensive value and value on the base paths than Harper. I like that Trout hits line drive home runs, that he has a lot of bat speed and there's not a lot of effort in his swing. With Harper, you get a much higher energy and a guy who's trying, I think, too hard a lot of times. One discussion that we were having again with Jason Gray of ESPN about Harper is that it almost looks like in everything he does that he's playing in a showcase event. And he's the kind of guy who I've seen many times overthrow his cutoff man. He'll chase a high fastball with no strikes or with two strikes. And he's still very young. He's already played in Double A. These are things he's going to learn, but I think Trout's a much safer bet to be a long-term above-average big leaguer. And while he may not hit 40 home runs, Trout could be a 30-30 kind of guy sometimes. So it's not like we're talking about someone with low upside. I don't think that Harper, when you factor in defense, really has that much more upside than Trout. He could be a better fantasy guy, but this isn't about fantasy for me.
Do you think that he will, and this isn't not necessarily a comp, but with the arm that he has, it's kind of going to end up like maybe Justin Upton for the Diamondbacks, where he consistently attempts to throw guys out, and it'll happen once in a while, but a lot of times it doesn't make it, and it's not that smart of a play. Do you know what I'm saying?
Harper has a very accurate, very strong arm, so I don't mind for him trying to gun out runners. I think he's going to make highlight reels and get people on their feet more than he makes people say, oh no, he did that again. I think Harper's capable of throwing the ball from the right field warning track on a fly to third base to gun down an unsuspecting runner. And I'll pay to see that any day of the week.
Me too. Let's do a little lightning round here. This was Wes Yee's favorite thing that we're going to do in this podcast, a little lightning round. Now, I think let's start out with Danny Holson. Let's do a little lightning round. Wes, why don't you go first?
I think Holson's a low ceiling but high floor kind of guy. I think that's been repeated by a lot of people who've seen him. He's got a little more velo than I expected to see, and I'm not sure that he's going to maintain that when he's pitching every fifth day. I think he'll be in the majors next year. I think he's going to fit in nicely behind Felix and Pineda, and I look forward to seeing what he does.
I'll second that. I think Holson could pitch in the big leagues next year. I'll disagree that he's a low-ceiling guy. I think he's a potential top-of-the-rotation starter, but for me, he's an above-average injury risk because of his low arm slot.
We were watching him play the AFL, and I think it's a slider. That's what I think what we came to the consensus of. That slider was ridiculous. It was making hitters look stupid, and I realized that the difference, you like you guys were saying earlier, where the hitters might be double A, the pitchers might be high A, but I thought it was pretty darn good against some double A hitters.
When you command three average or better pitchers, you're going to have a successful big league arm, and that's what Olsen is.
All right, who's the next guy on our Adam, do you have the next guy that's on our lightning round?
Unless you want to start us off with Anthony Rendon.
I'm a Rendon fan. I have concerns about his injuries. He didn't come to the fall league, which some people thought that he would. I can't blame the Nationals for that. If he's not fully healthy, then yeah, you've got to let him rest it up. And I'm still real high on him. I think he's going to be a above average regular and sometimes all-star.
Yeah, a lot of people jumped off the wagon with his shoulder injury this year. He was thought to be as close of a thing in this class to be a lock for number one overall pick heading into the year, and that really derailed him. But I've talked to people who see him as above average defensive third baseman. When I saw him, I didn't quite see that, but he could have made strides. I last saw him play regularly his sophomore year. I don't think he's going to be a huge power hitter, but if he's playing third base and playing solid defense there, when you combine his patience and just his solid overall approach to hitting, I think he's a good chance to surface as an above average big leaguer.
Between his injury and the fact that he's probably going to have to learn a new position, I don't think he's going to make the majors until 2013.
What does he play? New position?
I think
First?
they're going to try him at second. Obviously, Ryan Zimmerman is third on lockdown, so.
Right. What's the, and not to get off subject real quick, but what's the transition like when you go from, hitting with metal bats and college to now wood?
I think that transition is not as big as it used to be. The BB cores really did a number on a lot of college baseball last year, and I don't think Rendon's going to have a problem with that transition.
He was pitched around so much this year too. He was the big bat on his team, and I feel like he's almost as much of a sleeper as you can be for someone who's gotten as much hype as he has, because the abilities are still there. And if he comes back healthy and that shoulder's okay, he could take off and be in the big leagues in a blink of an eye.
If he gets there in 2013, maybe Harper gets there in 2013 also, and that could be a pretty nice roster.
Yeah,
I
that'd
know.
be an easy sell for a ticket.
Yeah, no doubt. And the last guy, let's do one more lightning round. Who's the next guy, Adam?
I guess we should finish up maybe Wes on doing a quick Cole versus Bauer.
Okay. I like Trevor Bauer as much as anybody, but I'm gonna take Cole here. Scott I talked to said that something that happened, and he was from LA actually, that so he saw Cole quite a bit at UCLA. Something that happened between his sophomore year and his junior year was an adjustment in his arm slot, and what they did was they raised up his arm slot to sort of push his velocity, and it came at the expense of some movement and at some command. It seems like from what he saw, he said that in his first two appearances, the Pirates had sort of pushed that arm slot back down. And he had reverted to that in the Rising Stars game, and he looked terrible. But if that's true, and that's something that they're going to be working on with him, I think that he's gonna emerge as a frontline starter, and I'm not too concerned about how his stuff has looked how his stuff looked in his junior year, and then there in the Rising Stars game.
It's easy to look at Cole as a high upside guy, given how hard he throws, and he does have a good changeup. And when you have that combination, that can be potentially lethal for big league hitters. But I still think there's a chance he ends up as a reliever. It's not uncommon for highly touted college guys to not live up to the hype in the big leagues. And Bauer is an intriguing one in that he doesn't have the most orthodox mechanics, and I think he is a bit of a fly ball pitcher, but he had immense success at the college level, and I think he's going to carry that through, hit the ground running in the big leagues. But I think Cole's a bit more of a long-term project, so for me, it's Bauer.
I hope I can weigh in just a little bit here on this too. I know Keith Law compared Gerrit Cole to Steven Strasburg, and I don't really see that. I'm more on board with you, Adam, and that I think he's going to be a reliever. But I really, this might be biased because I am a Diamondbacks fan, for the most part. I live in Arizona, but Trevor Bauer, the guys that you see who are at the front of rotations doing ridiculous stuff have stuff like more like Trevor Bauer, and these are not necessarily comps, but Roy Halladay tops out at what, 93, 94, You know, they're not the hard. Lincecum doesn't throw 99. There are some who do, but
not anymore. They're relievers.
Well, good point. For the most part, they become relievers. You know, not everybody's a Steven Strasburg, so I think I like Bauer better anyway. But like I said, I'm biased.
I think that's one of the things that makes Cole so enticing, though, is that he's able to hold that velocity deep into games. I saw him at UCLA throwing in the high 90s in the seventh and eighth innings. He could end up being a power reliever. But he's going to get every chance to start. This is a guy that has no problem going 100-plus pitches. I know he didn't throw as many pitches as Bauer did this year. But Cole can hold his velocity, and he has the off-speed pitches, and he certainly doesn't have Strasburg command. I think that was a little hyperbolic. But he's got good enough command to start at the major league level, I think.
The problem I have, though, is for me, he's more of a radar gun hype sort of guy that if you watch his fastball and you're not seeing 98, 99, 100 flash on the screen, you see a pitch that's pretty straight that isn't fooling hitters. And I think that he gets a little too much love because of the numbers he can put up.
Well, I don't know this, but what's the secondary pitches from Cole? Did you guys get to see those?
He was mainly fastball changeup, from what I recall, in the Rising Stars game, and he does have a good changeup.
Okay. Well, I think that pretty much wraps up what we wanted to talk about, guys. Did you want to throw anything else out there? Any other prospects that you guys saw you wanted to discuss?
We've touched enough. If there's someone you think we've missed, you can check on projectprospect.com or hit us up on Twitter.
That's right. And speaking of projectprospect.com, we can expect the top 100 list for 2012. Adam is working hard at that. I know it is. In fact, I just got a little sneak peek. It was like, you know, a month early for Christmas, but it just happened. And on that note, Adam, why don't you give us just one sleeper who's going to be in your top 100 list for 2012?
Sure. The one I'm kind of kicking myself on last year because I had seen him and I liked him a lot when I saw him when he was young, and I didn't put him on our top 100, was Henderson Alvarez. He was a guy who was already throwing hard when he was 19, 20 years old. He saw exceptional command, and kind of going along with that thought, someone else I saw a few years ago who I thought had amazing upside, and I've had scouts go out of their way to bring him up, and this year I think he could make a big jump, is Adrian Salcedo with the Minnesota Twins. He's a big, pretty thin right-hander, but he has a strong enough frame where I think he's a starter. His mechanics are a little funky, but I've learned to be less hesitant with mechanics. I think he is an above average injury risk, but I also think he could get up to the big leagues and establish himself before he has an arm injury. He's had very good ground ball rates for the most part of the minors. He has excellent command. It's just the swing throughs, and I think he's one of the guys who has such good command that he tends to be around the plate a little too much at times. But he's a power pitcher with command who keeps the ball down in the strike zone, who's pitched a full season already in the big leagues and is still very young. I think he's going to make a huge step forward. And whether you're investing in baseball cards, getting ready for fantasy, or an exciting Twins fan, or just someone who's into prospects, make sure to keep a close eye on Adrian Salcedo for the 2012 season. He could make a huge step forward, and he is today's sleeper for most likely to appear on our top 100 prospects list, and probably not on many, if any, others.
And I just want everybody to know this is not a light. This is not to be taken light. Adam Foster's 2007 sleeper that nobody else had was Dustin Pedroia, right, Adam?
Yeah, he had made it on lists before, and he was someone who was closer to the bottom half of our top 100 that year, but there have been some guys over the years who we've hit on, and there have been guys over the years we've missed on too, so hopefully Salcedo is one we hit on.
Salcedo, all right. Just to reiterate then, here in closing at the show, follow us on Twitter, at @Jared_Thatcher, at Adam W. Foster, and at Wes Yee. Check us out. Send us questions. Look for the Project Prospect 2012 Top 100 to be coming out shortly, hopefully by the new year. And visit the site. Get the Digital Prospect Guide. Download that if you can. I don't know. Are you guys still giving out free Digital Prospect Guides?
Yeah, anyone who wants to send me an email at adam@projectprospect.com, be happy to give you a free digital prospect guide. It's something we put a ton of time into over the last 3 years. You'll get top-of-the-line scouting quality videos, our analysis and numbers, and now it's free.
Awesome. Thank you. I got mine, and I've looked at it a few times already. So, well, in closing, guys, you want to say bye to the internet?
Yeah, thanks for hosting this, Jared. I'm looking forward to doing more, and it was good having you on the show, Wes.
Enjoyed it.
Thanks, guys. We'll see you next time.